Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna.
Got it caught! Touchdown! Oh my gosh! How did that happen? He got it from 59 yards away for the win!
Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Community First Credit Union, Carey Limousine, Wachovia, Sonny's Barbecue, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Jaguars This Week. Brian Sexton along with Jeff Longman, and we expect John Osher to join us, the senior writer at Jaguars.com, very shortly. Joe Fortunato's here. It's the first time we've had everybody here since the draft.
Yeah.
Nice to have you back.
Yeah, in fact, I was, we did the draft show, and then for the next couple days, I actually watched the draft in earnest. I enjoyed it. You know, the NFL does a great job of broadcasting the draft product because, think of years ago, and, it was kind of a ragtag thing, and now it's a big deal.
Competition makes it better, and now you've got the NFL Network sitting in the same building doing the same thing as ESPN, so they got to work it.
Yeah, and I didn't see what the ratings were. From what I understand, they were a little bit down, but,
the
numbers were still good.
They were down 23% on primetime, first round, but here's the deal. They still did better. That was the week that the NFL or the NBA was ending series and beginning series, right? Ending first round, starting second round series. And they still did better with the draft ratings than the NBA did for their playoff games, which goes to show you just how dominant the National Football League has become.
It's amazing to me. That great moment. And now that moment is over, what do you have to really kind of sink your teeth into? There's nothing there. You've got now it's back to legal things.
And
that was the nice thing about the draft that was so good this year is that at least it gave you kind of a reprieve from lockout talk. You don't have that out.
For the NBA now and the NHL playoffs, this is a godsend for them because people aren't talking about the NFL. And they've got everybody's attention in other places right now. And here's what I worry about. There was a survey that was done that said, I think it was a Harris-Chilton poll, that said that 19% of the respondents said that if the NFL misses regular season games, they won't watch this season.
Yeah. And that's what I worry about because I really believe that they have lost a lot already.
I think so, too.
Think about when you're getting ready for the season. All off season. People are thinking about, the free agent additions, and then they start talking about the college additions, and then they start talking about the undrafted additions and the late free agency additions. And what it does is it builds up an anticipation level that people just start get into a frenzy almost.
You
don't have that now.
But forget the frenzy for just a sec. Do you every day go to an NFL-themed website? Do you go to ProFootballTalk.com? Do you
every
go
day.
To ESPN and look?
Every day.
And see, you play the game. You're part of the game. It's part of your life. The average fan does, too.
Yeah.
And there's not as much there anymore. It's all speculation. And what they've done through free agency, what you guys created in 93, was a year-round league. And there is a hunger for it. The problem is if that hunger is not satiated, where are they going to get fed? Because people are looking for entertainment.
Well, and the thing that I worry about as far as teams that, are going to try to sell tickets, and this team is one of them.
Oh, yeah.
At some point or another, people are going to, I guess you could say, commit their disposable money to certain areas. And you wonder, with the league maybe finally getting back on track at some point, will it be past that point where people have already committed
their money,
that disposable money elsewhere. That's a reality that the NFL is going to be faced with,
And that people can watch it in high definition on a flat screen TV without ever getting in their car.
No, they've got
their computer at home.
It's a great TV product. It's not nearly what the TV product, what it used to be, just because the networks, I think, have just gotten so, and I understand why, because the networks are paying an incredible amount of money to get the rights to broadcast the NFL, and so now it's become the broadcast has become very, very commercialized, and so you're not getting a lot of the meat and potatoes between plays like you used to. You're getting a lot of product promotion, and I understand that part of it, but clearly the league has lost a lot of momentum, with up until this point, and then now it's going to continue. Now they're talking about, I guess, a decision at some point
Well, here's the deal. June 3rd, there's a hearing in St. Louis before the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals. Now, that is generally considered to be a more business-friendly, conservative court than, say, the Ninth Circuit, which is in San Francisco.
Well, they're the ones that granted the stay.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But that still doesn't indicate whether or not they will or will not, because they're going to rule on the legality of whether the lockout's there. Now, whether it takes one day or one month, they'll rule on whether or not the lockout is legal.
And then if it's legal, still have another ruling to come from Judge Doty about the irreparable harm.
Oh, yeah, that hasn't even been touched yet. All this does, and you're a good person to speak about it because you went through it. And by the way, John Osher joins us now. John, how are you tonight?
Good.
Here's the deal. All that ruling in June from the Eighth Circuit will determine is whether or not the owners had a legal right to lock the players out. If they say yes, then the lockout goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been told that if they win, the owners win that one, they're dug in and we're probably going to miss some time. But if the players win, it goes back to business as usual under a set of rules. If they try to impose a set of rules that players don't like because they're not an association anymore, well, then you've got antitrust lawsuits that are being filed left and right, which is why the reports came out this week that the owners were working on a potentially different set of rules that might preclude another court appearance. So all this one. Then you got the antitrust lawsuits that have been filed, the irreparable mm-hmm. harm lawsuits that have been. It's the Brady lawsuit. It's just there's so much in front of it. There is so much out there to get through. And the problem is you can just hear the radios going, God, they're talking about labor again.
But that's the issue where the league is. You know, now some of the other things that we'll eventually get to is, you know, contact between agents and players under contract, or contact between coaches and players under contract, contact between personnel people and the undrafted rookie class, which, you know, when the draft ended, that was it. So they were supposed to have no contact whatsoever with agents and prospective draft picks. But I'm sure that because of that rule that was instituted, there have been reports that that has gone on since the draft.
Sure.
But I guarantee you there was a ton of phone calls that were being made during the draft with, you know, a general manager calling up an agent saying, hey, we really like your guy. If he doesn't get drafted, we want him here. And I'm sure there was a ton of that going on during the draft to let all of these agents know that, hey, we want your guy when we can get him. And I'm sure that some people have broken the rules and have gone about it in their own way at some point. I'm not saying that this team has or any other team has, but I would be shocked if it didn't happen at some level around the league.
Of course it did.
Yeah,
sure. I mean, there's teams that adhere to the old saying that if you're not cheating, you're not trying.
By the way, through all of this, you know, it's going to be long, it's going to be dark, it's going to be, you know, a painful process. Next Monday, mediation does resume. The court-ordered mediation by Judge Susan Nelson, so that's Monday the 16th. What we were talking about before you stepped in, John, was that there's an Adweek Harris poll that shows 19% of the respondents to the poll are less likely to watch the NFL if the lockout delays the season. And so there is that fine line, and maybe we're reaching it earlier, maybe later, but there's that fine line that you've got to walk, because don't think of them as fans for a minute. Just think of them as customers for your mm-hmm. business.
That's who they are.
Yeah, they're customers. And at some point, there is a law of diminishing returns on any deal in 2011, meaning both sides lose no matter what the deal says when they finally get it done.
And I just keep going back, and, you know, Jeff probably feels differently because he comes at it from a player's point of view, which he should. You know, there's no question that right now the owners are taking a bigger hit than the players, because it's the owners who the season tickets are diminishing, the sponsorship's diminishing. And I just keep thinking, if they really didn't need the new deal, if they truly didn't need to get a deal done to make it work, and we all know that Wayne needs a deal to make this work in Jacksonville, and he needs the right deal. If that wasn't a real concern and the owner's stance on the money distribution wasn't real, I just don't think they would be willing to lose this kind of money.
And I think, and I said this before,
there's a player's side too as well, obviously.
Oh, sure. I think that the owners are dug in now because they've committed themselves to losing money. And they might as well get something for the losses they've already incurred.
I might surprise you in that. I mean, I'm in agreement.
Okay.
In some in some parts of this with the owners, in that, you know, there is no accounting for cost. I'm a big believer that there has to be an accounting for cost. I was a big fan of the old collective bargaining model, which was designated gross revenue.
Right.
I thought that that was a very healthy model for all. And with the new model, I understand the owner's concerns, very much so. But I also understand the player's standpoint that it's hard to give back.
Right.
You know, I understand that point. And, you know, you've got a new guy in DeMaurice Smith who, if he does anything less, will look like a failure. And so I understand that from his standpoint. And I think DeMaurice Smith knew it right away when he took the job, that the only way that he was not going to agree to something that would be less would be through the court system. And I think that's why the players were quick to dissolve the union and to file the lawsuits.
Was there not an element to it? He sort of got to show the players that he's tougher than Upshaw was.
I don't think you need to show that you're tougher, but you've got to be able to, you know, the old Jerry Maguire saying, show me the money. I mean, that's what the players' position is probably at, where it's at. And then, you know, obviously I'm very far removed from the game now, but I mean, I remember when I was playing and I was wanting Gene Upshaw to address more of the retired players' needs when I was playing.
Right.
Because after all, it's not about the guys that are playing, because if you do more for the retired players, then it's still doing more for the current players because they're going to be a retired player at one point.
Right.
You know, and then there's reports. Yeah, I mean, and so I was kind of an outcast in the union somewhat because I wasn't on Gene's bandwagon. In fact, Gene Upshaw didn't like me very much at times. And I was okay with that. And he didn't like me because I thought the money that he was making as the leader of the union, which there's some things coming out about that now, I thought it was atrocious. But, I mean, I do understand the owner's position. I mean, any businessman wants to have an accounting for costs.
Right.
One more quick thought before we take a break, and that is that the Miami Dolphins yesterday had a meeting with their employees, and they told them pay cuts are on the horizon. And just before we start thinking about millionaires and billionaires, which has kind of been the company line out there on both sides, the reality is that it impacts a lot of people, and not just employees of the team, but people who work in the stadiums on Sunday for extra money, you know, to pay for Christmas or help put their kids through college or whatever. So there is a lot at stake. We'll take a break and come back. More of Jaguars This Week. We'll talk football and everything that's on your mind, NFL, here on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. All right, rolling right along here. Brian Sexton along with Jeff Loggam and John Osher's here. Joe Fortunato as well. You can join us, 355-NFL1, 800-355-6351. We got a chance to talk about the first round pick with you that night that we were on the air, and then you were off and we haven't seen you. So your thoughts, since you watched the rest of the draft, your thoughts on William Rackley?
I like Rackley. You know, from what I've read, you know, because, I mean, obviously it's hard for anybody to have an accurate opinion on a lot of these guys because they're small school products. I mean, and what kind of exposure do any of the experts, you know, have on these young guys from small schools?
I think you've opened a can of worms, or rather it's been open in your mailbag all week long, hasn't it? Small school, big school?
Open, closed, beaten to death, you name it. Yeah.
Thoughts on small schools in general?
To me, I mean, you find football players, you know, the old Vic Catchman line, you find football players where you find football. And I think, you know, years ago, the small schools just had absolutely, you know, very little impact on the league. But nowadays, there's so many good programs at the small college level and good coaching. And you know, we were just talking a little while ago, me and John, and you were in the room too, and we're talking about the development of players when they come out of high school. And the thing that really strikes me is I remember when I was in high school, and because we're talking about players developing at different stages of their life. But in high school, we had a superstar high school player that you guys may remember who played at Duke under Mike Krzyzewski, and his name was Billy King.
Mm-hmm.
He was
we had drinks with him in Philadelphia a couple years ago.
That's right. He was the two-time men's basketball defensive player of the year at Duke. Couldn't shoot a free throw to save his life. But, man, could he play defense and could he jump through the roof. And Billy was a good friend of mine at Parkview High School where we grew up in Sterling, Virginia. Well, in our district, we had, you know, a couple different schools that were in Manassas, Virginia. It was Osborne and Osborne Park. Well, Osborne Park had a basketball program that was pretty pitiful, and they had a player there that was a very tall black guy, skinny, gangly, uncoordinated. We used to laugh at him. He was terrible. I mean, Billy used to jump over top of him and be doing reverse dunks all over top of the noggin of David Robinson.
Right.
This was David Robinson, who, you know, by the way, is a pretty doggone fantastic NBA player. Well, David, because he developed late in high school, didn't have any colleges that came knocking on his door saying, David, we want you to come play basketball. He goes to the Naval Academy, develops, and turns into a phenomenal player. Maybe one of the greatest of all time as far as some of his unique abilities for a big man. Well, that happens with football players too.
Probably more, because strength and size, I think people underestimate how much bigger and stronger and just developing into a man that you do between 19 and 23.
Oh, big difference.
In football, that's a huge, huge thing.
Huge difference. Another example, when I grew up playing Little League, there was a guy that I played in Little League with, and his name was Randy Cockrell. And he was like a man among boys in Little League. We get to high school, he's starting as a freshman at our rival high school, and he's just killing people, and he was killing me. Well, the older I got and the more physically developed that I became, because I was a very late bloomer, all of a sudden Randy Cockrell wasn't the beast that he used to be anymore. You know, and he was kind of became average size, you know, 6'1", 200 pounds. Well, all of a sudden, by the time I was a senior, I was 6'5", 6'6", you know, 215 pounds of strapping muscle.
Sure.
Strapping muscle, John. Okay, I'm telling you, strapping muscle. But, I mean, that's everybody develops late. You know, and there are some people that just, you know, they take a few more years. And a lot of those type of players end up at small college programs. And a lot of those type of players, because they haven't had early success, usually have a much stronger work ethic. Mm-hmm.
Well, the guy that always sticks out to me is Chris Warren, who started with you at Virginia, did he not?
Yeah.
And then transferred where, Virginia Commonwealth?
Yeah, well, he failed.
Okay.
He had to transfer to not Virginia Commonwealth, it was Furman.
Right.
But he was a tremendous football player for the Seahawks. He ran for over 100 yards here in 95.
But I mean, when Chris came out, he was, you know, he was a five-star recruit. You know, I mean, he wasn't destined for small colleges. He ended up at Furman, I
didn't know
he was.
I didn't know that.
Because he actually was in the same recruiting class as I was at the University of Virginia, and because we had Barry Word, who you remember, Kansas City, and also
Minnesota.
Another running back by the name of Howard Petty, Chris Warren wasn't going to see the field. Chris Warren was our starting cornerback as a true freshman at Virginia. And then he flunked out. Not that he was not a smart guy. He just, you know, transition of high school and playing, starting, and the demands of academics at Virginia, which is not easy. It's a very, you know, good school for academics,
sure.
John.
Sure.
Brian.
Oh, no. I went to Kansas. I never deny you.
And so because he didn't do well academically, he just transferred to Furman. Of course, you know, he ends up being drafted by the Seahawks and has a great NFL career.
Well, Rackley really fits into what you're talking about, too. Rackley went to college at 260 pounds, and he's coming out at 310. Well, at 260, nobody wanted him for obvious reasons. So he went to Lehigh.
260, nobody wanted him. How about that?
But, I mean, that's the reality of where we're at, but all reports that this guy has developed, and he is now, you know, why the Jaguars don't, you know, we're not the only team that we're going to take him in third round.
Right. No.
Let's take a break. We've got news next here on News Talk Radio WOKV. Then we'll return with another half hour of Jaguars This Week on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it. Rolling right along here on a Wednesday evening. Brian Sexton, Jeff Loggeman, John Osher, and Joe Forgiato here. We're talking football now. We've talked enough about the labor issue. We don't want to beat it to death. If you have a thought on it, though, want to share it, 355-NFL1, 800-355-6351, at Jags Voice for Twitter, and Facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars. Okay, so we talked about Rackley.
Yeah, you know, my overall opinion, because, you know, I mean, we really, how does anybody know a whole lot about some of the other picks? Because, I mean, you know what, Mount Union and other schools. Is that, you know, we're going to see. But one thing is very clear, and that's Gene Smith certainly does not downgrade the school. You know, Gene has always said, I grade the player, not the school. And I think that's become very apparent now that he, it's not that he values the school more, It's that he doesn't grade the player down because he went to a smaller school as much as other general managers and personnel people may.
In fact, he kind of upgrades it because he seems to think he can get a better player around earlier than most people do if he doesn't let the school bias influence him.
I'm not sure he upgrades. I think he just allows that grade to stand so that by almost elimination or by logic, since he's allowing it to stand, other people are upgrading, that player is going to be there when it's time to pick, and he's a best available player guy. So the best available player grade-wise, if everybody else is bypassing these guys and he's not, then it's probably going to be sitting there on the board. And I think that's what happened with Shorts. I think it's what happened with Przinski. I mean, these guys, from everything Gene said after the draft, with most of these guys, it was a case where when they were on the board, it was like, well, we got to take him. He's there. The grade's there. And it was almost like we'll be going against what we believe in if we don't take this guy because this is where we've got him. And, you know, I'm just a guy who believes that if you've got a system and you believe in it, stick to it because having a system you believe in is better. Even if you're wrong, it's better than not having a system.
Yeah,
they believe in.
I didn't get a chance to see, you know, because, of course, all the draft grades come out soon after, and I didn't get a chance to see it because I was gone. I was out of town. And I guess C's kind of seemed to be the theme because there was
– there because of the Gabbert thing somewhere.
And then I guess a lot of the because the grades were in the B-C range was because they didn't draft any needs.
Right.
Well, no duh. I mean, most people address their needs in free agency in both tiers. In the prime free agency period before the draft, and then also after the draft, because if you didn't get your needs in the draft, then you do it with that third tier of free agents. So all the logic of the C's and that they didn't draft what they needed, what a bunch of hogwash.
True.
Free agency is a complete mixed bag right now because they can have four or five different lists of players that they want, but there's no guarantee that the players they want will even hit the market because we don't know what the rules are.
Yeah, you don't know whether it's going to be 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, what?
It's tough for them to look that way. I mean, obviously, though, that's where their focus will be in terms of improving on defense. 2, 3, 4 years, I mean, you're not looking for long-term big-name guys, I would think, but guys who can come in here for the next 2 or 3 years and bridge the gap while you draft more.
Well, I had a question, and I was working out at the gym – I believe it was yesterday or today. I can't remember. Guy comes up to me and says, hey, he said, can I ask you a question about the Gabbert selection? I said, yeah, sure. He said, what do you think? And I said, I'll let you know in 3 years. You know, when we had a chance to see him and he obviously you expect him to be a starter by then and to have success. And I said, you don't know. But my response to that was, hey, look, whenever you have a chance to grab a free agent – or excuse me, a franchise potential quarterback. You got to take it. And he said, and his first reaction was, like a lot of people, well, what about the defense? That's what free agency's for. And Gene and I believe everybody in this building has said that they're going to be very active in free agency. They've made no bones about it. They're going to spend some money on the defensive side of the ball in free agency.
And they're going to look for... I don't want to say mid-level guys, but they're not looking for the high level. They're looking for guys.
I don't know. I mean, we didn't think that last year, Aaron Kampman was even on the radar.
True.
And then, bang, Aaron Kampman signs a deal.
I'd be surprised if there wasn't one high, what we think of as a high-profile guy. But for the most part, they're looking for guys who can play back there and be solid. And I believe with the idea that clearly Gene has built this defense – he wants this line to be the thing on defense that makes a difference right now. And then on the back seven, you want to be good enough to support that line. Because the line can make an impact. If the line's good enough, the rest of the defense can be a little less.
Well, and hopefully they're going to be able to pick up some undrafted guys that turn into something.
Well, about the line. How much more do you expect this year from a guy like a Larry Hart, who was drafted, and Aaron Morgan? They've got a couple of young defensive ends that people just forgot about because they were, third, fourth, fifth round picks.
Hey, I think, with Austin Lane, who I like a lot, I think Larry Hart, now that will have had a year to let his head stop spinning and to not have the workload that he had the first year, because remember, Aaron Kampman was limited and a lot of other defensemen were limited in training camp. Man, poor Larry Hart was just, I mean, he was taking rep Dragon. After rep, because Austin Lane was hurt, Aaron Kampman was hurt, Mincy was down for a little bit. I mean, all these guys were missing time in training camp. Larry Hart took all their reps. So when Larry Hart came out of training camp last year, he was like, you know, so he got the regular season. He just kind of never caught his breath. So, I mean, I expect him to be a lot better, but he is what he is. He's going to be a sub guy, you know.
On the inside, you get DeAnthony Smith back this year.
Yeah, now, boy, it's going to be interesting to watch. I mean, Achilles injury is a major deal. I don't know many defensive linemen that have come back and have ever been the same.
We know, I can't really know what any. He was going to be in the first place, other than a Tyson Alualu kind of guy.
Yeah, I mean, can you guys think of anybody that have had that? I mean, Dan Reno obviously was the most high-profile player that had an Achilles injury.
Right.
But can you think of any other player that had an Achilles injury that came back
and was the same? Because we saw Reggie Hayward. I mean, that's the best example for Jaguars fans. Is Reggie wasn't really
and Reggie wasn't the same. You know, but Ray,
I can't remember. But
I mean, that's tough.
I also can't think. You know, I probably don't know that many who haven't by detail either. I mean, but it is rare. It's a tough injury. It's tougher than the ACL.
Oh, it's not even close. You know, so we don't know what he's going to be like. I hope for his sake that he comes back and he's, you know, feeling 100% and better than ever. You know, because, I mean, watching him early, because, you know, obviously it happened very early, but watching him just move
in the OTAs.
Without pads and OTAs, he really did have some quickness and some movement. Kind of a nice, I don't want to say compliment to Tyson Alualu, because, you know, who knows, maybe he could have been right alongside him, and I don't want to consider somebody that has, you know, starting potential a compliment to somebody else. But, I mean, he looks like that he had potential to be an up-the-field, hard-charging defensive tackle that could penetrate. And with that injury, boy, your reaction now is, well, we got to wait and see.
When you start listing all the guys who will at least be in the mix, you got some numbers at defensive end, which 2 or 3 years ago you didn't have.
Yeah, and see, you know, a lot of people were saying that was a huge need. I didn't really looked at it that way. I mean, you got Mincy, Kampman, Larry Hart, Austin Lane at end. On the inside, you got Tyson Alualu, and obviously Pot Roast is, I mean, they're two very good football players. And then last year with the addition of
Leje Douzable,
who now is going to kind of have a position to grow into, because prior to him coming here, he played end, he played tackle, he played this, he played that, and all these different 3-4s and 4-3s. He never had a chance to settle. And last year, I thought he played pretty well, and he showed some pass rush ability. So, I mean, that's fine. And then DeAnthony Smith, you know, hopefully he comes back and adds something to it. I'm not that concerned. You know, I have more concerns that, for one, just from a roster standpoint, that you don't have a lot of linebackers under contract that you would consider starters. And then you have to get better in the back end on defense. You have to get better in the secondary.
Let's take a break. One more segment of Jaguars This Week, and we'll conduct that right after this on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it. 10 minutes left in our program this evening. You can join us, 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. What's going on in these player workouts? You suppose much is getting done, or is this just guys staying with a little bit of timing and maybe a little getting in shape?
I think that you know, there's something that can be accomplished for what I would consider the offensive skill players, and I'm talking quarterbacks and receivers, just to get repetition and get that rhythm. But I think besides that, there's not a whole lot that can be accomplished until you're in that team setting. To be perfectly honest with you, I would have, if I were in that situation, I would be very hesitant to want to participate in a lot of group activity. Not from the standpoint of, you know, let's go on the field and we'll do drills. You know, and I'm talking individual period type drills where you're doing conditioning, you're doing bag work. But as far as me versus, you know, Tony Boselli in the offseason, work on some pass rush stuff, I don't want to tangle my feet up with anybody. I mean, first of all, these guys, you know, they're paying their own insurance. They get an injury. What is it going to be classified as once everything's kind of back to normal, if it ever goes back to normal?
Right.
If I were a defensive back, I wouldn't want to be out there covering a wide receiver with no helmet on, you know, like you would have in OTAs, wrist tangling feet up. I mean, you can accomplish some, but I think the ones that can really benefit are quarterbacks, receivers, them doing it on air, cornerbacks maybe doing just some footwork stuff against a receiver, but not competing for the ball in a drill. But, you know, back in the day, and it's really not that long ago, how much has the league missed up until this point if you considered this, you know, pre-Jimmy Johnson era, which was, you know, 1990 and before? You missed a three-day minicamp, and that's been it so far under the old way. But since Jimmy came in and, you know, 1990 and then, you know, Coughlin 95 and all the OTAs really ramped up, now you've missed, you know, a three-day minicamp and you might have missed, you know, a week of OTAs. But, hey, prior to Jimmy Johnson, there wasn't a whole lot going on this time of the year.
So what does it become? I mean, let's just choose a date and say that they come in August 15th, right? That's a random date.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get ready for the season? Do you move the start of the regular season back? Do you take a game and put a tack it on the end like they did in 2001 to give yourself more time? Can you get a lot done in 2 weeks?
Well, they have the schedule built to where they can bypass the byes and people can play straight through. So, yeah, you'd probably end up moving it back a week. You know, my question is, and these are all hypothetical, so it's
kind of we're going to be doing a lot of that this summer.
To get into that, but you know, you'd like to think that if they got in, what's the regular start date? September
for the
opener? Yeah, the season opening weekend.
13th or 15th this year?
Okay, and
no, it's the 11th.
The 11th.
Yeah, it's the 11th. That's opening weekend.
What day of the week is that?
Sunday the 11th.
Sunday the 11th. Okay, that's when they're going to start because you know, tribute to 9/11.
Yep.
So September 11th, you would like to think that if they can get into camp, you know, August, first week of August, it could start on time.
I've been told they can buy 3 weeks because they've got the bye in the regular season, you've got the bye in the playoff week, and you've also got the bye before the Super Bowl. So it's my understanding that
But
you could play 16.
Well, wait a minute. Now you got three byes in there. You got a bye week. You got a bye before the Super Bowl. Where's your other bye?
First round of the playoffs.
You can't do that.
That's.
I mean, I don't see how they would do that. To me, what would you rather lose? You know, you don't want to lose a round of the playoff. You lose a preseason game.
So two.
You know, you got two, and then if you had to, you could eliminate.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Preseason game.
They can also push the Super Bowl back a week.
Okay.
So it's three.
So that's three.
It.
So they could gain 3 weeks there.
I misspoke. You can gain 3 weeks.
You could gain a fourth week by eliminating a preseason game. And, boy, there'd be a lot of people upset about that.
You know, moving the Super Bowl is a huge deal. So that's going to be a move of last resort. My question is, let's say they make it in by the 15th of August, because that's where things start to get a little dicey. How long does it take a team, to get in shape to go play? Can you do it in 2 weeks? Can you do it in 3 weeks? Can you cut your team and do the whole thing in 3 weeks? And what's that point where if they don't get in by this date, it's going to be awful tough for them
to make it? I think you're pretty much right there. I mean, August 10th, I think 15th is really pushing it.
And then if you push back another couple of weeks to where they would probably come in.
I'm talking about starting on time.
And I asked you this question, you know, long ago, February, and at that point it probably didn't make as much sense as it does now, but at what point does it start to hurt young guys who the coaching staff doesn't know a lot about, and they keep more veteran players, and I can't think of a name to give you, because
it's proven.
Because they know.
In a
time frame where they don't have enough time to really know, they go with what's safe and what they know.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
There's a couple guys that probably will get hurt on every roster.
I mean, that could change, you know, but, I mean, boy.
The rookies you'll see it hurt are the undrafted guys, because
teams no
draft guys
to show their wares,
and they almost got
to
keep those guys. But you know, I come from a place with the Colts, who approach it the same way this team does.
You originally come from this place, John.
Well, true, but my last 10 years with the Colts, and they approach it the same way that these guys do here, which is they like to keep undrafted rookies. They look for it, they try to get it, and so do the Jaguars. That has got to be – the fewer chances you get to see those guys, the harder it's going to be for those guys to make an impression.
And there's a potential Montel Owens out there who may or may not get a shot in 11. He may get back to camp in 12 if there's an injury or something. But that's one
it's
of the,
be
the
tough.
Casualties.
I mean, that's there's no doubt, you know, that boy, teams are going to be very anxious to evaluate the players, but they're not going to be able to evaluate them until practice squad. You know, so the practice squads are going to be very active.
Sure.
If the season gets a late start, because you're going to want to take a look at, you know, all these guys that you have, but then also the guys that other teams, you know, have that you had an interest in.
That's a good point. That's exactly where you'll see that happen. They'll turn that into the tryouts. You're right.
You know, so it'll be interesting, but, you know, I just, the longer it goes, the closer to a disastrous season that it could be.
All right. Now that brings us to this radio show. What are we going to do the rest of the time until they get it?
We could do a lot.
Good. What do you want to do?
We could do a lot. We could.
Because we're reaching that theoretical, hypothetical, you know, what if, this, then, that kind of scenario.
Well, fortunately, I mean, legally, I mean, there's so many things to keep up with. You know, and even though people may grow tired of it, people certainly want to know,
true,
you know, where's the end game at? I mean, I constantly get questions. In fact, I sent a email to a friend of mine who lives outside of Kansas City, Bert Ottmeyer, who I believe you met at dinner. And Bert is a casual football fan. I believe he played at KU or Kansas State, one of those two schools.
He's a K-State guy.
And his, you know, I asked him, I was cleaning out my address book, and I had two phone numbers for him. I said, hey, Bert, which one is the right one? And his reply back was, and this is just so typical of what people are asking now, his reply back is, this is my number. I've had it for a long time. How'd your turkey season go? And then the last question was, are we going to have a season? Mm-hmm. I mean, so people want to know, are we going to have a season? I mean, that's what is on their minds. They want to know.
I was at career day at Mayport Middle School today. That was the question I got. Not how did you get into radio, but are we going to see football? From eighth graders.
Sure.
Are we going to see football?
Oh, yeah.
And by the way, that is this franchise's target audience. Mm-hmm. The long-term growth is those kids that are, you know, 6th, 7th, 8th grade right now.
Well, it's hard, you know, but I think what we have to do is to really to work hard to understand as much as the legalese as we can.
Sure.
Because it's not easy. I'm not a lawyer.
But you went to Virginia.
I pretend to be
you
one.
You went to Virginia, which gives you a leg up on pretending to be one, right?
As exactly. He'll tell us.
John, Jeff, Joe, thanks. Guys, we will see you next week right here on Jaguars This Week.